Joining us on the hotline right now is the general manager of the New York Yankees, our buddy, our pal, Brian Cashman. Brian, Craig, and Evan, how you doing, pal?
I'm good, guys. How are you?
We're doing fantastic. Good. We're doing fantastic. So, give us kind of the overview of the moves you made and how you think they better the team. And then, of course, we'll get into some specific questions regarding some of the moves that did and didn't happen. But I figure let me give you the opportunity to tell Yankee fans from a 30,000-foot perspective why you think you've made the team much better.
I mean, obviously, the last chance to do what you could to improve the club or, attack areas of weakness. And clearly we had some areas that started to creep up on us with some of the devastating injuries to our bullpen where we lost, Chad Green and Michael King. Those were really difficult losses. Castro also earlier than that, went down, and so all of a sudden it started to create, a lot more, pressure on Holmes and Loaisiga, who was down already also, and then Chapman, who had been struggling. And so, our pen took on a radically different look. So, approaching the deadline, trying to, improve upon choices for our manager as he navigated things, because we obviously have August and September to play through, despite having a nice lead. You want to make sure you have some legitimate choices that can allow the manager to match up here as we move forward. So then also the rotation, there was very few high-end starters that clearly got moved, but we certainly wanted to get our hands on one of them if we could. We feel we accomplished that goal with the addition of Montas. And, that was main. And then obviously trying to relocate, Joey Gallo that just wasn't working here, and then replace Joey with an alternative. And that was, Andrew Benintendi, who, has played right in the big market already, has been in the postseason, was having a really good year, and, his profile's a little bit different than Joey's. And so those are what we have to show for our efforts. But there was a lot of different, areas that we pushed in on, but ultimately what we were able to pull down was this. And then in the end, the Montgomery trade for Harrison Bader. Bader's obviously on the IL, but we're getting access to an elite, defender in center field.
Well, let me ask you about that specific trade, especially in lieu of the acknowledgement that, the pitching staff, because of injuries, wasn't what it was a few months ago. I'm of the belief, and please tell me if I'm wrong, that the Montgomery trade for Bader had to be a companion trade that then didn't come through to acquire another pitcher, because if it's not, I don't understand why you'd get rid of a good pitcher when pitching something you're trying to improve.
No, that's fair. I could tell you you're wrong about the companion trade. The only imports that we were interested in were anything high end, towards the front end, if you could get. And obviously, if you imported like a replacement, for instance, or to soften the blow of losing Monty, then with Montas, when he reports and he'll be activated for, Sunday's game, then you're going to have to take some high-end guy out of the bullpen, that ultimately in the way things in the game is played. So we looked at things through the lens of October. There's risk associated with trading a quality every 5-day starter, but to access the caliber of, for instance, Harrison Bader, who was a Gold Glove center fielder last year in the National League, it has to pay a price. So ultimately, we have to get through August, and it's not that's easy. There's risk associated with that. We have Cole Montas coming. We have Cortez. We have Taillon. We have Herman. We have Schmidt waiting in the wings. And then we have, obviously, a somewhat reconstructed bullpen, and then September the rosters expand, and Seve comes back mid-September, and he'll have he'll have his rehab games prior to this, and he'll have 5 regular season starts before the postseason. So it's a little bit of a tightrope there, but we feel like it in theory lines up better for lanes to be driven in October for a manager if we did it this way.
Do you view Bader when he comes back? And you mentioned his defense. He's a brilliant defensive player. But do you view him as an everyday player in this lineup come October once he's healthy?
Well, he is an everyday player when healthy. And it just, I think that comes down to how, Booney wants to line things up. And that probably is what's the opponent, what ballpark we're playing in, who's on the mound, that type of stuff. You know, where is Harrison Bader in his in his cycle, you know, of coming back, and how's he looking? But so there's a lot of different lanes he can drive with him, which would be, again, when we can unpack that present, it would be as a starter, it would be as a, you know, somebody off the bench to seal a bag, it would be a defensive replacement. So if, you know, if he decides to line up in a whatever ballpark, if Stanton's in right, you know, assuming everybody's healthy, if Stanton's right. in right and Judge's in center and Benintendi's in left, then he's a defensive replacement. If he chooses, if everything's, the way it is, if Benintendi's in left and Hicks is in center and Judge is in right, then he's a choice off the bench, to steal a bag. But, he's also obviously a legitimate choice to be the everyday guy at the same time. So it just depends on how things shake out, where he's at in his progressions, and who's on the mound and what ballpark we have to be playing in.
You mentioned Severino. Was Severino moved to the 60-day IL because of just numbers game of making sure you had room on the 40-man, or was it, hey, we just don't think he would be ready to pitch at the major league level until mid-September?
No, he's not ready to be pitching. So he, just like right now, Harrison Bader's not on the 60, but if we need to move him to the 60, we can, because the time frame that he's already served and the time frame until he's back. So that's a different, like, if my roster gets jammed up, there's flexible pieces that we can move guys to the 60 or not. Like, and so Miguel Castro recently was moved there. Prior to being moved there, he was always a choice to be put there just because of the time frame. So same with Seve. The only difference in Seve's case was that he just never mapped out with our trainers, that it would take so long. So he was under the false belief.
Gotcha.
He was under the false belief when he got, when he got upset that he got put on the 60, he thought he was going to come back in 2 weeks to start pitching in the major leagues,
right,
which is ridiculous. So
talking to Brian Cashman, GM of the Mets.
Are you Yankees?
Mets.
Are you? Well, are you comfortable? I mean, I've thought about that a year ago. Are you comfortable with Luis making those rehab starts and then maybe making, not many starts at the major league level just because of the date, and then being a key starter in the postseason? Do you think that's enough time to have him in the postseason rotation?
Yeah. We already saw how he went through his last year. We brought him back as a reliever because we ran out of clock for a similar injury, although his last year's injury was much more severe. So he'll have his rehab starts to build up to safely and properly, his workload, because as a starter, it takes a lot longer. And then he'll have access to five regular season starts in the postseason. Before the postseason. And so that should be more than enough time to be sharp and at his best, performance levels. And so between his rehab starts and the that's assuming everything goes right, and there's no guarantee with that either. So
hey, Brian, we live in a world now where everyone tries to jump the gun to be the first reporter to break this story, to break that story. And the sad part of that is a lot of people throw a lot of crap against the wall, and there's no basis to it, there's no fact to it, but who cares? They got their name out there, right? And you deal with that, I'm sure, as much as anyone, having to answer agents' questions about rumored trades where there may or may not be any fact behind it. So there are two guys that the Yankees publicly, not through the Yankees, but through these reporters and insiders, were connected to. And I wonder if you could just shed some light on the reality of whether or not you were involved. And the two guys are obviously Ohtani and Soto. Did the New York Yankees make an offer to the Angels and Nationals to try to acquire either or both of those guys?
Well, I could tell you, I can't answer that directly, but I can tell you I engaged the 29 other opponents of ours at all levels of their rosters for what was in play, and then ask about players that might not even have been in play, and see if I could coerce those opponents to put them in play. And so that's the nature of the beast. So ultimately we made a lot of moves with the hope and belief that we've improved the roster and therefore in theory our chances. But this is all we can show for our work. There's, and me on behalf of all GMs in the game, there's so many conversations and failed efforts on a lot of different platforms that, you have nothing to show for it. But,
right.
So it'd be me, my staff. Mike Fishman did an amazing job, connecting with his people. And then you got, your personnel below.
Sure.
Mike and myself, whether it's Jim Hendry or Matt Ferry or Mike Pinsky or, Tim Nehring and at all, they're all engaging various personnel in various locations along with scouts in the stands. And there's so much stuff that people are information sharing. Hey, what about this? And it starts running up, and you got to vet it. And so it's a lot of work.
In the case of Soto, because he was traded, and it was like this secret that everyone knew, hey, they're going to trade Juan Soto, and they did. He went to San Diego. Did you, and I'm sure every team called, they should, did you ever think, we've gotten some traction here, this could happen? Did it ever get that far in the discussions with Mike Rizzo?
No. Yeah, we were, no. There was nothing that, nothing coming out of, the Washington operation that his best match was coming our way.
Did you take that as them not liking the prospects as much, or maybe you guys not being willing to trading all of those guys?
I would take that as, just like last year when Scherzer and Turner got dealt to the Dodgers, I would take that. And you have to know your opponent. And, Mike Rizzo is a former scouting director. And so I think there are certain things that he's going to gravitate to and he wants. And his heart and eyes were set on a certain very few locations more so than others. And I guess that's the best way to answer that. So I think it was very predictable in the end that San Diego, if he was going to get moved, was the most likely candidate, that or St. Louis, because I think the media does a very good job of assessing and trying to cover these things. And they were able to, I think pull from not, we actually, were able to determine that we necessarily weren't a match for them as much as other places. And so it was clear, I think, from the industry as well as, for myself, that we weren't, in a driver's seat for something like that. And then separately, that it's more likely going to be, it sounded like, between the Cardinals and the Padres. And, and I can't even say that's a true and accurate statement, but that's what all the noise was about. And there was no surprise when he landed in San Diego.
Talking to Brian Cashman, GM of the New York Yankees. Listen, no such thing as a perfect team, but I'm just wondering, what keeps you up at night looking at the team? Now you've got your team. This is what it is. Other than a couple of movements, guys coming off the IL, et cetera, as you move into September and then obviously the month that matters the most, October, what keeps you up at night? What's your biggest worry about the Yankees?
I can't really say. My job is, listen, if any of our important outfielders goes down, or infielders or catchers or
start.
Yeah. It just comes down to it. Like it can be anything and everything that changes a little bit of our landscape or a lot of our landscape, depending on what it is. And so, I think like any team, our chessboard is set. And, if there's a significant piece, you have pawns, you have queens and kings and rooks and the horse, whatever he's called, maybe I already named it. And one of the better and more important pieces come off.
We just call him, in my house, we call him the horsey. But yeah, I think it might be the knight. I'm not sure exactly.
Yeah, so exactly.
So on that end.
So ultimately, that's how it is. It's just, some guys are more valuable and important and makes your heart skip a beat than others. But all of it is connected. And then ultimately, injuries are part of the game. So, there'll be more coming regardless. And that's why this deadline is always so important to try to do as much as you can.
So fans are concerned, but fans are more emotional than you're allowed to be. Are you concerned at all about Gerrit Cole after a start like yesterday's?
No. I mean, the Gerrit Cole stuff is fantastic. We had Roger Clemens here, and yesterday was, to me, more Roger Clemens-like. I've been a part of some games where Roger did not have his best stuff. And so yesterday in the first inning, when obviously Gerrit was getting hit unusual for him, clearly, I was thankful that there was an off day today, because I was like, I don't know how he's going to get through this, and we're going to be leaning on our bullpen. Is it 8 innings? Is it 7 innings? But like Roger Clemens, who's one of the game's all-time great starters, the good ones find a way. And so Gerrit, despite all that, didn't throw in the towel. He competed, and found a way to get us, through six yesterday and cushion the blow. And we actually obviously were in the game and we were able to somewhat fight back and believe, hey, if this or that could happen, we actually close the gap on them. But ultimately, Gerrit stepped up despite what happened in the first inning, and navigated his way through it. And hey, these guys are human; they're not going to have their A stuff. And in his particular case, he just didn't have his A inning. But the rest of it was clean. And he provided the length necessary, so we didn't have to lean in on guys more than we had to in what appeared to be a game that was out of reach. So
Talking to Brian Cashman, GM of the Yankees, old buddy Didi Gregorius was released. Will you have any interest in bringing him back?
We're going to evaluate everything that's available at all times. So, ultimately, as these things keep happening, that's your only access to talent moving forward, whether you pushing it on the major league level or pushing it as a, hey, join us at Scranton, those are the assessments that we'll be doing.
When you're talking to 29 other teams and forgetting, the Ohtanis or Sotos of the world, and I assume every team asks about Anthony Volpe, was it a clear, we're not moving him, period, like Luis Castillo, Frankie Montas, sorry, he's unavailable? Is that how you guys have handled when teams ask about Volpe?
This probably comes from experience. Like, I don't want to go publicly and saying, he's not available, because then ultimately everybody else that's behind him per se, is going to say, well, I guess I am, So I would just say, some are more obtainable than others. And the guys that we moved, they were tough decisions to do, and they're really quality players. They're going to have big league careers, but you have to give to get. But we're also excited that we've retained what's definitely within the top 100 prospects in the game, players like an Anthony Volpe and a Jason Dominguez and Peraza, the shortstop. There's a number of other guys still here in the system that we're excited. And on the top end of it, especially, although our system is now depleted further by some of the moves we just made, but we do have some high-end pieces that are potential impact guys in the future moving forward that excites us. So, but I'd rather not say one is unavailable, and that, which implies others could be. I just don't think it's fair to the people, because they are human beings. And that's the aspect of the job that stinks, is that, ultimately, imagine if you worked for, UPS or Subway, and your boss comes in and says, hey, you have to move from your apartment, and I just sent you off to some other city in the country, right, and all hell breaks loose and your life changes, and it's just a
Montgomery.
Really bad part
Montgomery
of it.
Took it tough, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he's a homegrown guy that has roots here and family. He's part of the Yankee family, and he always will be. And it's I have to put blinders on and do what I think is right. Sometimes it works out, and sometimes it doesn't. But telling someone like a Jordan Montgomery, who is a homegrown guy drafted by Damon Oppenheimer, developed here, has had success clearly here. He's a bona fide major league starter. It's not easy. It's very difficult to tell people.
Sure.
This news, and it's more difficult to tell people like a Richard, Jordan Montgomery.
You've seen a lot over 20-plus years here, the good, the bad. Why, in your estimation, did Joey Gallo fail the way he did for the year he was here?
Environment. Just environment. You do as much homework as you can. You ask players that have played with him. You do as recon. And obviously we didn't get it, perfectly correct after the fact. But, certainly we did it all. We've done the due diligence on him. Prior to the deal, and at the same time talking to players that were on our club prior to doing the deal that had played with him in Texas, so we got everything and anything we could, it ultimately wasn't to be. I
bet you he was relieved when you told him you sent him to the Dodgers, though.
Him and I were talking for a while. I'm very transparent if a player wants it to be. So if a player asks me a question and engages me about what's going on, I will be forthright. I've always been that way. And so Joey and I had a lot of dialogue throughout, and I told him that I would do the best I can. I asked him, even though I knew I'd get it, I was going to get it regardless, but I asked him, just continue doing what you're doing. Give us the best effort you can. And, he checked all the boxes in terms of, he wanted to win. He gave max effort. He was prepared on a daily basis to try to contribute. He bonded with his teammates. He was beloved by our players in the locker room, and all those boxes were checked. It just did not, it just didn't work out. I was honest with him, and he was honest with me. And so when I did tell him, I can't tell you he was relieved or not. It was just a new chapter. So my job is, when things are going either well or not well. We turn the page and keep fighting.
Right.
Same with him. So he's turned the page now. He's with a new organization, and he's just going to keep fighting and competing, and hopefully the results will be better as he moves forward because the talent is all there.
When did you know? Like coming into this season, I think myself, there are a lot of Yankee fans that said, oh, he's going to have a big year. Full year in New York, Yankee Stadium, he'll put it together. When do you sit there and say, all right, it's the environment or it's something, it ain't working, we have to find a way to move on from him?
I don't have a specific date. I mean, I know that coming out of this, even though it feels like it's already been a long season, even though it's been a good season, but between the draft and the trade deadline and everything else, so turning the clock back, I know getting out of the gates I thought was important for him. Maybe after the last year's second half, now he's got his sea legs on, he's better aware of this environment, and again, as I just alluded to, trading people in season, they have to relocate, a whole new city, don't know most people, it's just not easy to do to anybody, and so I thought coming in, he'd be in a better spot, I thought it would be best if he got off to a good start, and I thought, if I remember right, that coming out of the gates, he was balling it up pretty good and hitting it with impact, but not getting anything to show for it. I remember playing the Toronto Blue Jays, for instance, earlier, not necessarily Joey Gallo specific, but I remember games we were playing them and their defense was aligned perfectly. It's almost on all our hitters. And they were, we were smoking the ball here, there, or wherever, and they'd have a four outfielder alignment or an overload on one side with the shift, and our guys are just maybe impacting it with a high velo, but right at a guy perfectly placed. And I just thought that's how his early season started. He was getting his walks, he was hitting the ball hard, but not getting any show for it. So it was like kind of don't get down on it, but don't get down, keep grinding, you're impacting. But after a while, I think that can turn into frustration and. Whatever. I don't have an answer for it. I wish I did because, it would avoid. I could, maybe avoid being in the first position or putting somebody else in that position. And so, at the end of the day, he's in a better place. I hope now, and I wish him best of luck. I thank him for his commitment and his effort. And ultimately, you can't control the results.
I'm curious. Every time Aaron Judge hits a home run, do you think to yourself, oh, my God, that's $10 million more I got to pay this guy? Does that go through your mind as he continues to have a torrid season?
No. I mean, when we concluded this spring, on our attempts to sign him at that point, obviously, his hopes are always every year to have a great season, and our hopes are like, hey, I hope you have an MVP season, and he's backing that up because that's good for him, and it's also good for us and good for our team, and so it's an amazing run he's been on, an amazing season that's propelled us to this point, and that's certainly we all hope, himself included, that that this continues all the way through October.
Going to wrap it up here in a second with Brian Cashman, general manager of the Yankees. Personal question. Is there a reason you haven't signed an extension at this point yet with the Yankees?
Yeah, historically the Yankees don't do anything with anybody until the very end. So it's been part of our practice that's just the way it's always been. And
love doing it? I know you've done it for a long time,
yeah.
And there are guys that get to your age and say, I want to do something else.
You call me what? You call me old? I'm a 55-year-old man.
Yeah.
I'm not old.
You're not a spring chicken anymore.
I am a spring chicken.
You think so? Because you repel
you.
Buildings once a year, but I know what's going on with you.
I'm going to call the WFAN's HR department and say you're insulting older people.
You would not be the first person to do it. I just wonder this. Do you love it as much as you did, say, 10 years ago, 15 years ago?
I love it when we're winning. I hate it when we're losing. And where the real, obviously, where the blood really starts pumping is trying to figure out, how to solve this or fix that or improve this or improve that. That's with the staff I have and the great ownership we've got, it's we're competing every day. It's, other people don't have that if you're not in the sports world, but we obviously are getting judged sometimes harshly because it's failing or sometimes really well because it's doing great. But that's the environment I love working in. And I love, there's that old A-team stuff, where was Hannibal or whatever with the cigar, and he's like, I love it when a plan comes together.
Right.
I love it when plans come together, and I certainly hate when they fall apart.
So from that standpoint, and I know everyone listens to the radio, reads the newspapers, when you make the moves you made to go into this season, and they're panned by everyone, and fans are calling for your head, and then bang, Yankees get out to the best start they've had in a long time, best record in baseball for the majority of this season. Is there any aspect of that, even all these years later, where you want to say, ha, told you I know better?
No, no.
Not even a little bit?
No, because I understand, you know, it's all driven from, you know, our fans want the same thing, which is, you know, the best talented team they can possibly enjoy for that upcoming
but
season.
But you never want to call Evan an idiot?
No, because, you know, I got too much respect for the game, and going in, I make every decision that I'm a part of, and it's not just me. It's, you know, I'm getting a lot of good advice from a lot of good people that are smarter than me, and ultimately I'm the one that has to make the recommendation and live with the better or the worse with my owner, and then our fans with the end result. But at the end of the day, you know, everything you do, there's no guarantee, and you have the fear of it not working out. What if it doesn't? There's no perfect this move makes this happen,
right,
and it's going to deliver. We've done a lot of different things that you know, we've imported a lot of talented players. We've had great talented teams consistently, but it's hard to get that to the very end, and I respect and understand that. So I got no issues with the complaints.
I'm curious,
and the second
though,
guessing.
Because you've resided over winning seasons every year you've been here, so it's not like you've ever dealt with a 90-loss season, but I'm sure you go into certain years feeling better about what you have than other years. This team is 70-36. I don't know if there was anybody around here who said, yeah, they're going to play 660 baseball. Did you expect this start?
Last year I did. last year's team, I felt underperformed. And, you know, we had, you know, and I don't even remember all the reasons why now. And then this year's team, I think, is more of a, you know, even though there's been some changes and, you know, and adjustments and imports and stuff like that, that's true of every year. But I just felt like last year's team, what we got knocked out in the wild card game, 91 wins, I thought was better than it played. There's no guarantees. These are really hyper competitive athletes that obviously have to be fine tuned and especially at the right time, which is October, and injuries can change things, and, you know, performance levels, you know, rise and fall, and some guys overperform and you get the benefit, some guys underperform, and hopefully some other aspect of the roster, you know, replaces that unexpected underperformance. But I thought last year's team was a significantly better product, you know, than it delivered, but that's baseball. So you go back to the drawing board, you try to digest what happened, and, you know, if there's areas that you can fix and try to fix it with the available market to you, and then what the payrolls happen to be, and you go back at it if given the chance. And that's when, going back to your question, when given the chance, I like what I do. I like being a part of it, and I'll try to do it as long as I can, but I'm given the opportunity to do. But anyway, going back, am I surprised by this year's team? I feel like our team was really good last year, and this team is a different version of last year's team, you know, with obviously changes. But I'm more frustrated that we didn't perform as well as we should have last year, and I'm thankful that this year's team's doing it. But none of it matters unless it plays in October.
That's it. Yep,
is it true that you're going to a specific game this weekend solely because you want the John and Susan bobblehead?
I'm sorry, what's that?
I was told that one of the reasons you're going to be first in line at Yankee Stadium this weekend is you want the John Sterling and Susan Wellman bobblehead that's being given out.
Oh, that's fantastic. Congrats to them. I never, you know, until somebody texts me with, hey, can you get me the Jerry Garcia bobblehead?
Or, like,
I don't
one.
Know what they give away here, to be honest.
That's how locked in cash is.
There you go.
I don't know what they give away.
They don't deliver them to me, so when they're showing up, I don't really know what the pregame stuff is or the giveaways, but I know they're really good, and I tell you, like the Nestor Cortez t-shirt and these bobbleheads and stuff, I know they're popular as hell. That's when I find out stuff is coming.
You find out after the fact when someone in your life says, hey, by the way, could you get me a bobblehead? Okay.
Well, I think John and Susan deserve a bobblehead without a doubt. They've been obviously amazing at what they've done for so long. So, and congrats to Susan for going to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, she's
that's
in
really
the Radio
amazing.
Hall
that's
of Fame
awesome.
As a trailblazer in our industry for sure. And it's a great lifetime accomplishment. Well, Brian, listen, always appreciate your time. Thank you very much for joining us. We'll see you at the stadium for the Subway Series. I look forward to talking to you down the line. Thank you.
All right. Be well, guys.
Thank you, Brian.
All right. There you go. So, okay.